Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to this episode of Scrappy ABM. This episode is going to be a little bit different. It's actually just a re-release from another podcast that I was on. We love the content, wanted to make sure you got it. If you like this content, we actually dropped the show just in the show notes below, so you can go check out all of their content. But for now, I hope you enjoy this episode of Scrappy ABM.
This is the first one for this year, 2025. We had a lot of good run last year with a lot of excellent guests. Hopefully this person doesn't ruin that trend, but this person who's joined us today, the founder of Scrappy ABM, and I may already give it away who this is, where he helps businesses build high-impact, customer-centric ABM programs without breaking the bank. His journey began as a full-funnel AE, where he quickly learned the personalization and strategy drive results, not cold calls and generic pitches. The passion for creative, scrappy processes, he's generated over $8 million in source revenue, delivered 16x ROI, and helped clients achieve massive successes, like launching a number one marketing podcast in the U.S., and driving $1.5 million in revenue in his first year in existence. That means it's Mason from Scrappy ABM. Mason, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Adam. I will go ahead and tell you, I'm going to break your trend. I'm probably going to be the worst guest you have. So a way to start out the year with low expectations, and then it only gets better from here. So I'm excited to be here.
Thanks, Mason. I think it's either the worst and the best at the same time. So like, you're good on both ends.
I mean, you help people with podcasts. Like you know what you're doing. Like we're the ones who are still struggling and figuring our way out.
I mean, we'll see how it goes. And I'm confident it'll be a good time.
Mason is got a great backdrop, got his color on theme with his brand. He's got the hat, Scrappy ABM shirt. I almost wore my Scrappy ABM sweatshirt hoodie that I got because I'm a client too, which is kind of unfair because I got a cheat code right to you, but no free promotion here. There's a lot of places, Kate, where you could go with this. ABX ABM is the rage yet again, it feels like. It's always seems to be there in the heartburn, even more so now that people are realizing you just can't spray and pray those emails. AIs, SDRs are kind of ruining the fun for everyone. Automations, you know, comments, you and I have seen it on LinkedIn where people just regurgitate what's been posted in AI-led comments as a way to try and get quote unquote new business. Kate, why are we leaning towards even more humanization and personalization within marketing programs?
Well, everyone's so quick to use AI, but if there's no strategy there, if there's no, you know, why you're targeting those people, you really can't run any campaign at scale. You need to kind of take a step back and really think about what is that strategy? Why are you doing ABM? Like why, you know, what are your goals? Like, what are you trying to achieve? And right now it's spray and pray is dead. And now there's even more of it because of AI. So it's what should companies be doing?
Thankfully, we got someone here to tell us. Mason, please tell me it's gated eBooks, generic sequences that send 500 emails out in a single day of the same message, and no segmentation of lists. That's how we do ABX, right?
I need you to not publicly proclaim that you are a client. If that is how you're going to start. So no, none of those are the answer. I mean, we can go in the very simple approach of like, when we actually think about what is the right answer, it actually starts with first, why are people even doing these things in the first place? And I think it is a current lack of pipeline that then creates a desperation to do short-term thinking that doesn't typically work. And it's also, generally speaking, having the wrong team do the wrong thing. So simply put, sales should not be doing mass outreach in any capacity because sales is a very personalized one-to-one type channel. Marketing should be doing scalable reaches to the masses to some extent. Now, obviously, if you're taking the account-based approach, those masses are clearly defined. But again, what we often see is the reverse, which is, I think, very funny because we're like, marketing is to create one-to-one specific content to every single contact at our account. And it's like, we can technically, but like, wouldn't it be better to like, I don't know, educate at scale to like right fit buyers? And then sales can do the one-to-one personalization based on engagement levels. But again, what you're saying is we're seeing sales do, let me enroll these 500 contacts into this one sequence every single day and then mass email and blah, blah, blah. Like, So I just think we have a lack of respect for the respective roles that each team should play in the context of an overall go-to-market strategy. Man, that's a lot of buzzwords.
I got my bingo card out and ready to go. So there's a lot to unpack there. I think, thankfully, I was joking. So you can keep me on as someone we can work with here.
Or you can charge him for some training on ABM and really like upsell the program.
Oof.
He might end up with a big invoice after this, Mason, between the two of us.
Man, I'll take it. I'm not paying the bills on this one. Mason, if I'm thinking about if I'm starting from scratch, right? Absolutely scratch. And I know that what you just said is true. We know the direction we need to head. What are the three things that I need to avoid to not basically like drop a big brick on my foot down the road when I'm thinking about the actual like tactical steps to get me to running a somewhat cohesive ABM playbook?
Yeah. First thing, should you run ABM? Because there's a lot of companies that try it that shouldn't. So for example, you need to have established product market fit, because the goal of an account-based program is to get more of your best fit customers. The challenge is if you don't have product market fit, you don't actually know who your best fit customers are. So before you go run an ABM program based off of a hunch that we really had like this one great customer that closed like 30 days ago, we want to get a ton more of those. It's like, well, maybe let it bake for a little bit. For context, Scrappy ABM has been in business for 18 months. And Adam, I made the mention at the beginning, I definitely need to update my LinkedIn because we've actually done about 2.8 in sales in the past 18 months. November was great for us. Suddenly we sold literally $1 million in revenue for new customers in the month of November. And we can now have an 18-month look back on what are the companies that actually have stayed with us longer, the longest, that have gotten the best results, that have the quickest adoption of ABM. What are the trends that we can see within those? And we're actually going to then focus programming for the next 12 months on a hypothesis. And we're not going to stop other things. We're just going to focus there and then see, okay, at that point, it will have been 30 months. So like 2.5 years of focusing on problem evangelism and then a hypothesis of who we think our best fit customers are. We will then have the determination that we clearly have product market fit, at which point we will then build an ABM program for the first time. I'm an ABM agency that will not build my first ABM program until I'm in business for 2.5 years. Like, so hopefully that gives people context of the first thing to avoid.
That was one of the questions that I had, because we assume a lot of our listeners are startups. And like, is there a certain, I mean, besides product market fit, which they should have before they even like really go out and sell, do you think there is like things they should be doing before ABM, or like what are some of the signals that they should like that they should start to evaluate, like, okay, ABM makes sense, like especially when they don't know what they want to be when they grow up and they're like, oh, yeah, I sold today, I sold here, yesterday I sold there, I'm gonna just do it all.
Yeah, I think for starters it is a ton of market research and no one wants to do that, but like the way that I actually got Scrap ABM off the ground, like first 10 customers, I went to 120 people and I said, hey, you know me, I know you, we're kind of buddies. Would you just listen to my sales pitch and just like tell me if it's even good? And this is how I'm going to market. And before I make this big announcement and this big splash, I would love the opportunity to just share it with you because I trust you. And I think you're the right person that I would inevitably want to work with. I'm not trying to sell you. And like, I had the relationship there where I could do that. I'll explain how you get 120 relationships here in just a moment. But from there, 50 people said yes. And then from there, 10 people actually bought. And I'll be super clear, I didn't go into those 50 conversations to say or to sell. Like, I just literally said, here is what I am pitching. This is what I will do for people. Do you think anyone would buy this? And 10 people out of the 50 that I said that to in 2 weeks said, I will. I was like, cool. I know what I'm selling is actually a viable thing. And then it's research. So I actually use my own podcast primarily to speak with my best fit buyers to understand the challenges that they're experiencing and the ways that we could potentially plug in. So I actually view podcasting potentially as just an incredible market research tool where you also build one-to-one relationships. So if you're an early stage organization, that's actually secret note. That's why we have a podcasting arm. We have many, many early stage organizations that look at my career and like what we've been able to accomplish. And they're like, how did you do that? And I was like, well, I talked with a lot of people that I wanted to sell to with no intent to sell them, but to understand their problems and their pains. And then I created services or products that directly address those pains. We can help you do that. Here's a podcast program. And that's actually our downsell for early stage founders.
Yeah, I noticed that on the website and thought that was a great entry point. And it starts the relationship, which is so essential in agency world, early, and you can keep continuing to grow it to that larger scale when they do need ABM. Adam, what is your top question?
This is faulty because I know all Mason's tricks because I've been working with them since November. I think the one thing too is, what kind of situation with data sets do we need to be thinking about? Because I know that plays a really key cog in how fast and efficient you can be when it comes to segmentation, because that's a big role of your playbooks, right? And yeah. ABM in general. Like, what should the bare minimum organizations be thinking about when it comes to that?
So when we think about data, I'm going to further outline the qualifications of where we actually primarily focus. For most ABM programs would just be a product line that does 10 to 50 million in revenue. There are very few organizations that can get to 10 million in revenue without product market fit. So again, and at 10 million, typically, I talked to somebody earlier today that has 8 million in revenue and 4 customers. And I'm like, okay, cool. Super weird. But most people aren't selling multi-million dollar annualized contracts. Most people are selling things that are typically in an ABM program, hundreds of thousands of dollars, or, you know, at least over 50K. So again, typically, let's play that out. You've got, I'm going to do very bad quick math. Whatever 10 million is divided by $100,000 a year, that's a lot of customers. You should have a fair bit of data at that point, at which point you can then say, awesome, this is a subset of customers that we actually know we work with super well. And then the goal is to identify all of the other customers that are not currently your customers that you could work with that look like your top 20%. For context, the reason we take this approach is this is just what PE does. We just do it, PE backing and layoffs. So super nice. So from that perspective, if you have the data to say these are our top 20% of customers, data today is actually relatively affordable and or cheap. Like, I'm going to talk about Adam for a moment, but like, Adam, in your HubSpot instance, you already went through and found all of the right fit customers for iDonate and segmented them using publicly available data. Like, it took some work, took some time, but like, you can find it. So again, from a data perspective, you need to understand firmographics, which are just like revenue count, or depending on how you're structured, like maybe funding, something along those lines. Employee count, team structure, technographics, which is a fancy way of saying like what tools do they use, if that's important, specifically for tech companies that we've worked with. Integrations are a really great selling point. So if you can share like the 1+1=5 story, it's really easy sell, which considering don't be a SaaS, most of you guys are. So those are just some of the things to look at that are the key components that should be the foundation for targeting on who is even on the list. From there, you then further segment based on intent and engagement. Intent would be third-party intent data that's coming from a variety of sources. I prioritize this less, primarily because intent showcases in-market signals. It does not showcase any brand engagement or brand awareness. So it shows in-market, does not show that they're in-market for you. And that has been a rude wake-up call for many people that thought third-party intent was going to be their silver bullet. So the primary thing is engagement data based on your various channels that you're currently using. So that is the approach that we take, and hopefully probably a slightly circuitous route, but we got there on the foundations from a data perspective, what people would need.
So you're telling me intent signals are not going to do me any favors on itself. Okay.
What I tell people is if you have intent data, it is helpful for additional prioritization. It in and of itself is not a viable signal, and that really ruffles some feathers.
Yeah, there's some tech vendors that might have some issues with that.
Yeah, because it's just so affordable.
Oh, man. Number two, what second thing then should we be thinking about avoiding as we're setting up this journey into AB baby life?
Yeah. Sales and marketing alignment is typically the number one or number two. I'm going to take this from a slightly different angle because I'm sure everybody's heard the like MQLs aren't real. And I agree. But that said, this has been a very interesting one that has come up more and more that is actually not within the context of the marketers to control, which is sales compensation. Sales nature, and this is no shot at them, just kind of the nature of the role, fairly money motivated. Like, for example, I hired a seller. 50% of his compensation is tied to him closing deals. It's like half of what he's expected to do is directly tied to, did you close a deal or not? And then I give him a livable wage. And like that is how Jim, who's our account executive, makes his money. The challenge that often comes in with an ABM program is sometimes there are specific kinds of customers that are easier to sell but harder to retain. And as a result, they're not best fit customers because they have a low lifetime value to customer acquisition cost ratio. There are other kinds of customers that are slightly harder to sell but stay exponentially longer. And as a result, they have a much greater LTV to CAC ratio. As a result, it's better for the business to close the customers that are take a little bit longer. But if your comp structure is not set up appropriately, we have seen it to where people are primarily comped on the number of deals they close versus the value of those deals. So if you have a seller that's going to make more money selling bad fit customers, unsurprisingly, they will sell more bad fit customers. But most marketing teams don't actually know how sellers are incentivized or compensated. I actually did a talk on this with Exit 5, and I asked 150 marketers, do any of you know how your sales team makes their commissions? And two people out of 150 did. So when you think about this from a sales and marketing alignment perspective, it's not crazy difficult to align with sales when you understand their incentive structures. So people make the reference of like, when you work with us in an ABM program, we'll make you more money. They don't actually know that though. So as a result, sellers don't believe you and then they don't buy into the program. So what I typically recommend is in some way, shape, and form, if you're trying to get sales buy-in, executive leadership should support and actually helping do the math on if you work with us on this ABM program, this is actually how you'll make more money. Like not hypothetically, not figuratively, but like this is the math. And if we do the math together and you like the result, great, let's go. If we do the math together and you don't like the result, that's a massive problem for your organization that should be solved at an executive leadership level, because that means that we're not appropriately incentivizing sellers to close what is our best fit customer, or that means that we're not actually going after our best fit customer. So again, sales compensation actually unlocks a lot of the buried challenges from an alignment perspective that aren't typically addressed, and it's hard to address as a marketer. So that's why we don't talk about it. But again, if you can, as a marketer, can help your sellers understand how they make more money, then they'll actually buy in.
Does that buy-in extend out into helping or assisting with the picking target accounts by rep, and whether that be geographical, whether it be by vertical? There's a lot of different ways to splice that. Or do you find it's more difficult when they're just handed accounts instead of have fun?
Ideal situation. I mean, I'm going to take a step back here because every way in which accounts are divvied out is radically different, especially if the primary organizations that are listening are startups. They may not even have territory planning at this point because they may only have like two or three reps, and it's kind of a free for all. Like I was in a startup and I was one of four AEs, and they just said, if your name is assigned to the account, it's yours. If there's been no activity on the account within the past 3 months, it's up for grabs. And like that was the territory planning. So like pretty terrible. That said, ideal situation is that from a target account perspective, we've gotten sales insights. Sales should be able to bring typically decision committee that's involved in the sales cycle for targeting purposes. Marketing should bring market segments and market sizes. Finance, which nobody talks about finance, but it's actually the most valuable function for targeting, should bring client profitability. Like who are actually the best customers for us from a profit perspective? And then typically your CS team can bring NPS results and like fact word like neediness, which would factor into profitability. But sometimes when you have a services-based business, that profitability is hard to track based on the neediness of the client. So anyway, that's a separate conversation for another day. And the last component is just executives. I say this lovingly. Sometimes CEOs get in their head. This is the kind of business we're going to be. This is the direction we're going to go. And if for whatever reason you can't actually get the executives bought in the targeting, it doesn't really matter because they're just going to ignore it anyway. So when we think about the actual targeting, that's the first step, is actually identifying and getting these different leadership levels aligned. From there, ideal situation is that you have a mixed list where you've got some accounts that sales is really bought into, but you have other accounts that are as data backed as well, because what that will do is two things. One, it will show that marketing is trying to support sales in the way that they want to be supported. But two, ideally, the data backed list are accounts that are, again, true right fit, best fit customers that also have some form of engagement, which would actually allow for an easier win. One of the things we started to do with many of our clients is, like, first thing we do is a closed loss program, because it's the fastest way to actually generate a win with sales. So they buy into the program more efficiently. We have other clients that just bought a plan from us like a year ago. And I'm like, yeah, we started at the awareness level and we've been doing this for 9 months and we're seeing a lot of account engagement. We're seeing great pipeline, but, like, we haven't closed a deal yet. And I was like, well, you started with accounts that have never heard of you. So, like, it's been 9 months. It's like October. You know, they have a budget cycle and they need to buy your software. So, like, that just takes time sometimes if you start with people that have never heard of you. So again, we want to balance quick wins with a strategic vision for where the organization is going based on clear targeting and clear criteria that comes from various departments within the context of the leadership team. Man, this is really nerdy.
But you're touching on the fact that, like, it's not just the marketing team. It's not just the sales team. It needs to be an entire business strategy that everyone gets behind to actually make it work. Because, like, no one thinks to bring finance to the table, but finance is the ones who are looking at the numbers and telling you if you're over-servicing, if it's a services business, or if you're losing money because they turn quickly. So it's having these folks in the room seems like the best bet. But how do you do that? Like, who leads it? Does it have to be, you said executives, but does it have to be the CEO every time?
I'm going to give super quick context as, like, a CEO of an ABM business, as someone that has worked in-house at other businesses and has worked in another ABM agency. The reason this often fails is because we can't get bought in on the fact that, like, we're actually going to intentionally exclude some people. And some CEOs lose their minds over that because they're like, what? We're not going to sell everybody? Like, there are people that want our stuff and we're going to say no to them? That's insane. Like, because they just,
there depending has to be on prioritization. Because if you're doing it for all, then you end up doing it for nothing.
Yeah. So, like, a lot of people, so quick, again, context. We went from 0 to 2.8 in like a year and a half. That's, like, kind of nuts. No. A lot of people have asked, like, how did you do that? I was like, well, I just did one thing. That was it. I just talked about the same problems for a year and a half. I hate to say it this way.
Product market fit.
Yes. I've just been talking about the same stuff for a year and a half. But here's the thing. Many people in this audience, they've never heard of me. So because I'm just saying the same stuff over and over and over again to the point where, like, I'm kind of bored of it, but, like, I know that there are people that have never heard this and they don't know. And that's my job, is to educate. Sorry, I get really passionate about that side.
No, but when you're bored, that's when it's really, like,
yes!
When you're hearing yourself, that's when it starts to resonate with your audience. Like, you need how many touch points, like, for our awareness to really, like, make an impact? Like, that is the, and that's, you touched on it earlier. Sometimes it takes a year to be like,
yes,
well, I heard about them. Now I need to do the education. Then I finally have to convince inside to buy, and now I have the sale. That's a year sometimes.
Yes. So to answer your question of, like, does it have to be the CEO? Depending on the size of the organization, like, there are plenty of, like, we're working with a couple of multi-billion-dollar companies, and I'm gonna be honest, like, the CEO is not involved in any of this, but, like, the division head is.
Yeah.
So depending on the size of the organization, there is somebody that has P&L responsibilities.
I was going to say they have a P&L, so they're seeing the numbers.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think it is whoever has P&L responsibilities that is held accountable to those results is the person that needs to be bought in, because there will come a point where there is a shift in pipeline volume in inbound revenue. So, for example, I'm going to be really honest. We sold a bunch at the end of last year. I learned a lot of lessons based on clients that were earlier in the year, and I primarily now disqualify, which is at times terrifying, because I'm looking at our current, shoot, we have 2.5x pipeline coverage to hit our goals for this quarter versus the time last year I was at like 5x pipeline coverage. But much of that pipeline was not qualified, churned quickly, or, like, didn't, they just stalled out. So, like, I'd rather lower pipeline volume at higher quality that closes at greater deal values than greater pipeline volume at mostly fluff that closes poorly or closes and then churns quickly.
Yeah.
You cannot get that kind of buy-in without somebody from a P&L responsibility perspective saying, I'm bought in, I understand this, and we're going to go this route because this is what's best for the business long term.
Okay, we've got, should we do an ABM program? Getting sales and marketing alignment is crucial things that are missteps. What's that third? Is there a third one that like, hey, don't do this. Think about this.
Yeah. Final one, and I'll make it short and sweet because I think we went way deeper on these other two topics than we were anticipating, but hopefully they were good things. I reference marketing manager Susie a lot. So Susie works at a company and her CMO went to a conference and heard about ABM and then comes back from the conference and is super stoked about this incredible revenue strategy that they're going to start to generate. And then they go back to Susie and they just kind of throw it at Susie and say, can you do ABM? Then Susie, fun fact, was a marketing manager that was already doing everything else. So she already had a full plate. And then we just told her to do organizational change. And we gave somebody the accountability to build a program that they have no authority to create. And then Susie will get fired in roughly 6 to 9 months. So don't do that. Like, if you're going to build an ABM program. Susie. Yeah, poor Susie. Like, and I kind of like, it's not even a joke, honestly. Like, I've just had a lot of friends that have like gotten laid off. It's and people.
Horrifying how much talent is out there for some of the reasons you literally just laid out.
Yes. So if you're going to add something to somebody's plate, they only have so much time in the day. Like, some things have to get taken away. So I'll give a quick example. We're a rapidly scaling company, and some of our team members have dropped some things as of late that were like, honestly, kind of important. So the first thing that I did is before I got upset with them, I first said, hey, you dropped a couple of things. This is unlike you. Are you okay? Cool. You recently asked for more responsibility. I gave you more responsibility. And then I noticed this trend. Do I need to better train you? Or is this too much for your plate right now? Or is there something else? Let's review what's on your plate right now and then reprioritize based on the things that are actually most important. And like, some people genuinely just don't know how to prioritize. And I'm not saying that as like a negative, but they're just like, they look at everything on their list and they're like, all of this is urgent and important. And like, most of the time, most of it isn't. So they miss the most urgent and important things because they've never been trained on prioritization that aligns to business outcomes or things that are actually their job. So like, there are many things in business that can be done by many people. There are a few things that can only be done by a certain few number of people. It's like, they just do things that are outside of what they should be doing. And as a result, the things they should be doing suffer. Sorry, that was a very long tangent. Long and short, don't give marketing manager Susie the accountability to build an ABM program and just leave her on an island and then fire her. If you're going to do ABM, recognize it's marketing and sales, it's customer success. You got to get everybody involved. And like, yes, you should have a tactical owner of the plan, but it needs executive sponsorship to actually remove roadblocks to get done.
Well said. All right. And with that, the other big question always comes up, no matter who I'm talking to, it feels like is, well, how much do I need to invest in a tech stack? And it's not running out and going buying one of the big, it's just retargeting and intent signals. Woohoo. Yeah. I can say that because I've been through that and it sucked in terms of spend. I think that you could probably put together a really solid stack for under $200 a month. Mason, from what you've seen though, you're probably the expert. What do we actually need when it comes to doing some things you mentioned? Like, hey, how do we figure out signals? How do we figure out who these people are? How do we build lists? Like, what is the absolute crucial stuff that anyone can go hopefully get clearance to buy tomorrow and start implementing and using?
So I'm sorry, if my face looks really bright, I'm looking at my LinkedIn because I actually made a post that was like, here is the $200 a month ABM tech stack. So I'm just going to go pull that up real quick and tell you exactly what the tech stack was to get to this point. So for like, to put it really bluntly, it's a CRM, a marketing automation platform of some kind. Now, marketing automation is where you're going to potentially get kind of expensive. Oh, here it was. It's $1,000 a month, not $200 a month. But this is like the full tech stack. So hear me out. HubSpot Starter. So with HubSpot Starter, which is actually what we've been on for the past year and a half, I have reporting. I have tracking. I built my website on HubSpot. So I actually have like contact level engagement on the pages once the contacts have been actually added to our CRM. And that's on non-marketing contacts. Like, you're not going to be charged more based on that usage. So you can build your website, manage your pipeline, and do manual email sends as marketing emails through HubSpot Starter. So like that, $20 a month. At least it was last year. Maybe the prices increased. I don't know. They've been kind of raising prices recently. So anyway, there's that. $25 a month for StreamYard. I like StreamYard for streaming capabilities because it is both a one-to-one relationship builder with the guests, but also you can live stream the event. So you actually get one-to-many from a content perspective, and you can use that as a podcast. Next would then be a Buzzsprout for hosting, Descript for editing, Apollo. This post was made 11 months ago. Apollo's data is now questionable, but regardless, there are many data providers that you could look at. I think Sales Intel also has a $60 a month plan. I also know that they are really investing pretty heavy in the ABM space right now. So more to come from Sales Intel, but like essentially find your favorite flavor of data enrichment and then do some form of contact enrichment based on your target account list. So you can actually know who to go after. And then Propensity is free. With Propensity, you can actually get third-party intent data on up to 100 accounts on a weekly basis. So completely free. And then you can use RB2B for website de-anonymization. And again, also completely free. What else is there? You can use Grove Cookie Company. You can send out cookies as direct mail, and you can do that on the send. And it's actually branded as well and comes with a note, which is super nice. You don't need a big tech stack for that. LinkedIn Sales Nav is like $100 a month. Then you can do thought leadership ads for $500 a month, and then use Canva for $20. That total investment is $978 to build a ABM program that you can, again, do at scale. So the thought process there is HubSpot tracks everything. Your podcast creates one-to-one relationships and also good content that's relevant for your other target accounts. You then post-create content, and then you re-advertise that content at $500 a month from your personal brand page to your target accounts. And anybody can do that. And the goal there is to drive traffic to the website that even you re-engage based off of website de-anonymization.
And that's in addition to dumping thousands of dollars into generic brand paid AdWords, right?
Adam, you're real close to getting noticed.
As a client.
I'm doing my best. Well, no, here's the thing too. It's like one of the things I always find is that, hey, we're going to invest quote unquote in ads, and ads means a lot. So I'll do it all encompassing, and we're blowing money. We're setting money on a dumpster. If you are able to prove, and this goes back to data, right? Look at the trailing last 12 to 18 months. Hopefully your lead source and detail are tracked properly. If not, spend some time cleaning it up. And you can make a real good case to say, hey, instead of spending $10K a month, let's divert those funds into exactly what you just said, Mason. You're saving money. So your CFO probably loves you. Or if you know what you're doing, you say, hey, I'll give you this much back. Give me this much to go do what I need to do. And so you still have a buffer to go experiment, because that's still an important bucket. And you run, man. And don't sign multi-year contracts. Don't do that. Always negotiate quarterly payments. Don't do full annual. So you give some flexibility. CFO will love you for that too. But all of a sudden, like, you're up and running within a month, I would argue, if you're technically savvy with a lot of this stuff. I love it. That's kind of the route we did. I got the liberty of having a few other contracts I inherited that were a little bit higher. Bush is fine. But like for us, that's Zoom Info, which I'm not mad about. But like we use Vector instead of RB2B, but that's free. We use things like Asset Mule for bespoke ABM pages that are instead of like PDFs, like we send those out. But our stack's pretty dang close to what you kind of outlined there, and we're keeping it super trim. So I can attest that your words are smart.
Thank you. That's all I'm looking for actually at this point is client validation. So I appreciate that.
That's why you really come on podcasts, just to get that third party validation. I love it. It's like software advice awards.
100%.
Mason, as we kind of round the corner, what are your predictions for where ABM might be heading in 2025, specifically for marketers? That's all I really care about, to be honest. Is AI going to wreck it? Is it going to add it to the goodness? Are there going to be other things that pop up that rock our worlds? Like from your POV, you're ingrained in this. Where is it heading?
I have really, really bad predictions, if I'm being entirely honest, because scrappy ABM, for lack of a better word, is just like what ABM should have been before it was overtaken by technologies. So like I personally, this is not good for me to say, but like don't have a ton of great tech insights. Our team is doing a lot of experimentation with AI. Apparently our team built a custom GPT for every single client that is starting to like create a searchable index of all of the things that we need from a client perspective, which is like really cool. But I gotta be honest, like I didn't do that. Our team did. So as I look at it, I think the core predictions are people will go one of two extremes. They'll be my extreme, which is just like, let's cut out all the crap and like actually just do the work. And yes, we'll work a lot of hours, but like we'll actually build programs that are impactful and build lasting relationships. That's my approach, is like, all right, everything else we're doing right now is not working. Like, let's get really close to the data. Let's do it manually and then figure out what actually works. And then we can automate and scale it from there. So like, that's one approach. The other extreme that I'm seeing is just like all AI. So like, we're head to head up against another agency right now for a client. And they're like, yeah, but they've built this like proprietary AI software that's like doing ABM at scale in like a week and a half. And I was like, that's really cool. I don't know how. And like, is it good? Like, you know, I'm just like, I have a lot of questions on that front. So I think we'll go one of two extremes. Again, I'm one extreme, which is just like, we're digitally fatigued, which is another buzzword. There's your bingo card, Adam. I think that's all of them.
You should have hit bingo by now.
Yeah, for sure. So like, I'm personally kind of in that camp, just like, this is a lot. And like, I'm not trying to sell a crazy number of people. I just want to help like very specific people super, super well. And that's what most of our clients are looking for, is like very specific sets of accounts. You know,
yeah, I wonder, I mean, with the whole AI taking over, the thing is, those goals probably helped when you're trying to scale really quickly and growth at all costs. So like, do you really need to scale that quickly, like for some of your programs, or can you do it more thoughtful and like more profitable?
I think actually that's probably just the trend. It's just like, we're actually going towards profitable customers versus high revenue customers. Actually, that's for sure the trend, because that's what all of our customers are talking about. And that's kind of the approach that we take. And I think that's why we resonate. It's just like, what's profitable? Like, why would we do everything else? So that's probably the biggest trend that I would outline. And the other thing is, it's going to sound really bad for my brand, but like, I actually think that ABM will probably go away. And I'm seeing some really, really influential people. And I actually think they're right that like, at this point, why do we have another term for it? Like, it's just what we should be doing.
Because marketers like to create terms. And at the end of the day, what you're doing is marketing. And then you're being very specific about it. You're developing a strategy. You're doing market research. It's all marketing. It's just, we tend to overcomplicate it when we're trying to say what we're doing to make it seem like it's better. But I think, like, keep it simple and like do the foundational work that needs to be done, and I think then you'll succeed, which is where I think marketing got so far away from. Yes. That now I think you'll be fine, because at the end of the day, it is your strategy and how you help clients is going to come through, versus like the people who are saying ABM is dead or ABM this or ABM that. It's like, if you understand marketing and you put a good strategy and you actually execute, the results will be there.
Yeah, I think people will still be doing ABM. I just think it will be either, you know, demand gen or marketing or growth marketing or performance marketing or
growth marketing.
It'll be go to market. I get asked a lot, like, well, how are you different from a go to market agency? And I'm like, probably not that different. I'm probably just, you know, more focused on profit than they are, but that's really it.
Bring us home, Adam.
I'm just laughing about the go-to-market agency. It's just absolutely, we're the silliest people on earth. I believe marketers are, in fact, and I love being one, which does that say about me? Mason, there's a lot of good things going on. Go find Mason on LinkedIn, Mason Cosby. If you haven't seen him, it's kind of hard to miss, but go find him. Like, you'll find him somewhere. We'll drop his link in the notes. Also, your website, which caught me off guard. You're one of the very few people that run a similar agency or agency what you do and actually have price points that are pretty easily accessible, this view, so I can quickly DQ myself if I know that in fact I'm not ready to make a sound investment. See what I did there? I pitched sound investment. But amongst Thank there you got tons of different resources. You mentioned the podcast. There's everything you need to understand how to approach ABM on your website. Is there anything else that anywhere else that we can find you in the streets of Indianapolis, perhaps somewhere, who knows?
Yeah, the two that are more recent, one would be User Gems. So if you go to the User Gems website under the resources tab, there is the Scrappy ABM Masterclass, and it's 3 hours and it's free. Easy. So I actually just give away exactly how we work with people. And I don't mean that in like it's a pitch. I like just tell you exactly what to go and do. So if you've got 3 hours and you want to really get to be quite acquainted with me. I got that. And then the other one is we just released a masterclass with CXL. CXL is a paid membership, so it's not free, but it's a 2-hour course that I kind of did user gems as like step one, and CXL is really step two. That's for more advanced ABMers. And the last thing is just like Adam referenced the podcast. There's like 140 episodes that talk about this from about 1,000 different angles. So if you just look up Scrappy ABM, my dumb face will be everywhere. And there's a newsletter. There is LinkedIn. There is the podcast. Those are places to find us. And in all of those places, we just educate. So my goal is that you're massively successful. And if you happen to need help to go faster, you can pay us, but we'll give you everything away for free.
What a gentleman you are. And I can attest, the team is phenomenal. You've put together some extremely talented individuals. They're just a joy.
I had a client that literally told me yesterday that I was the least impressive person on my team, and it's the highest compliment that I've ever received.
That is a very nice compliment. That is incredible. That means you hired really well and you got really, really excellent.
What he said verbatim is that few agencies in which the team outshines the sales pitch and the LinkedIn talking heads. I was like, I'm the LinkedIn talking head. So thank you.
It's a nice demotion.
Take it.
At least you know what you're doing with the hiring, at least. And it's only up from there. So this is good.
Doing my best.
Hasten.
You're a good recruiter.
Thank you so much for dropping in on episode number 23. First guest
Adam,
of the year.
Out of two here, we have to get to 149. Is that what you said? Is that a new goal?
We have to like step it up to like 3 episodes a week at that point for a minute. Mason, you're the man. Thank you for dropping by. And thank you for bringing some goodies on how to approach ABM for anyone who's listening. Kate, as always, thank you for bringing the insights.
Thank you for bringing the guest.
Yeah. Drag him along. Mason, you're welcome back anytime. Just give us like 20 episodes in between so you don't, doesn't look like you're trying to promote Scrappy too much. Although,
I mean, we can go ahead and record next week and then you
talk. All right. It's cool. You heard it there. All right. For those of you listening, this has been episode 23 of Don't Be a Sass podcast. Thanks for sticking around this long. We'll be back next week. We got some really cool guests lined up over the next like 5-week run. So we're flipping over to comms and PR focus. I'm excited to sit back and learn from Kate. She's got a great guest coming along. Until then, y'all have a great one.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.